It is blowing hard this evening, cold too. Another wonderful sunset. Golden colors illuminate the sky. The moon casts beautiful rays in combination with the more vivid ones from the dipping sun. If all was as beautiful as the scene, we could consider ourselves in some paradise. But it is dark and cold in the tent, and I shiver in a frozen sleeping bag. The inside fur is a mass of ice congealed from my breath. One creeps into the bag, toggles up with half-frozen fingers, and hears the crackling of the ice. Presently drops of thawing ice are falling on one's head. Then comes a fit of shivers. You rub yourself and turn over to warm the side of the bag which has been uppermost. A puddle of water forms under the body. After about 2 hours you may doze off, but I always wake with the feeling that I have not slept a wink. The party made only 3.5 miles on March 3rd. They were finding the sledge exceedingly heavy to pull, and McIntosh decided to remove the outer runners and scrape the bottom. These runners should have been taken off before the party started, and the lower runners polished smooth. He also left behind all spare gear, including dog harness, in order to reduce weight, and found the lighter sledge easier to pull. The temperature that night was -28°F, the lowest recorded during the journey up to that time. "We are struggling along at 1 mile an hour," wrote McIntosh on the 5th. "It is a very hard pull, the surface being very sticky. Pinky still accompanies us. We hope we can get him in. He is getting all he wants to eat, so he ought." The conditions of travel changed the next day. A southerly wind made possible the use of the sail, and the trouble was to prevent the sledge bounding ahead over rough sastrugi and capsizing. The handling of ropes and the sail caused many frostbites, and occasionally the men were dragged along the surface by the sledge. The remaining dog collapsed during the afternoon and had to be left behind. McIntosh did not feel that he could afford to reduce the pace. The sledge meter had got out of order, so the distance covered in the day was not recorded. The wind increased during the night, and by the morning of the 7th was blowing with blizzard force. The party did not move again until the morning of the 8th. They were still finding the sledge very heavy and were disappointed at their slow progress, their marches being 6 to 8 miles a day. On the 10th they got to the Bluff Peak in line with Mount Discovery. My instructions had been that the Bluff Depot should be laid on this line, and as the depot had been placed north of the line on the outward journey owing to thick weather making it impossible to pick up the landmarks, McIntosh intended now to move the stores to the proper place. He sighted the depot flag about 4 miles away, and after pitching camp at the new depot site, he went across with Joyce and Wilde and found the stores as he had left them. We loaded the sledge with the stores, placed the large mark flag on the sledge, and proceeded back to our tent, which was now out of sight. Indeed, it was not wise to come out as we did without tent or bag. We had taken the chance, as the weather had promised fine. As we proceeded, it grew darker and darker, and eventually we were travelling only by the light of stars, the sun having dipped. After 4.5 hours, we sighted the little green tent. It was hard pulling the last 2 hours, and very weird travelling in the dark. We have put in a good day, having had 14 hours solid marching. We are now sitting in here enjoying a very excellent thick hoosh. A light has been improvised out of an old tin with methylated spirit. The party spent the next day in their sleeping bags, while a blizzard raged outside. The weather was fine again on March 12th, and they built a cairn for the depot. The stores placed on this cairn comprised a 6-week supply of biscuit and 3 weeks' full ration for 3 men and 3 tins of oil. Early in the afternoon, the men resumed their march northwards and made 3 miles before camping. "Our bags are getting into a bad state," wrote McIntosh, "as it is some time now since we have had an opportunity of drying them. We use our bodies for drying socks and such like clothing, which we place inside our jerseys and produce when required. Wilde carries a regular wardrobe in this position, and it is amusing to see him searching round the back of his clothes for a pair of socks. Getting away in the mornings is our bitterest time. The putting on of the finniskoia is a nightmare, for they are always frozen stiff, and we have a great struggle to force our feet into them. The ice sennegrass around one's fingers is another punishment that causes much pain. We are miserable until we are actually on the move, then warmth returns with the work. Our conversation now is principally conjecture as to what can have happened to the other parties. We have various ideas." Saturday, March 13th, was another day spent in the sleeping bags. A blizzard was raging and everything was obscured. The men saved food by taking only one meal during the day, and they felt the effect of the short rations in lowered vitality. Both Joyce and Wilde had toes frostbitten while in their bags and found difficulty in getting the circulation restored. Wilde suffered particularly in this way, and his feet were very sore. The weather cleared a little the next morning, but the drift began again before the party could break camp, and another day had to be spent in the frozen bags. The march was resumed on March 15th. About 11 p.m. last night, the temperature commenced to get lower, and the gale also diminished. The lower temperature caused the bags, which were moist, to freeze hard. We had no sleep and spent the night twisting and turning. The morning brought sunshine and pleasure, for the hot hoosh warmed our bodies and gave a glow that was most comforting. The sun was out, the weather fine and clear, but cold. At 8:30 a.m. we made a start. We take a long time putting on our finneskoye, although we get up earlier to allow for this. This morning we were over 4 hours getting away. We had a fine surface this morning for marching, but we did not make much headway. We did the usual 4 miles before lunch. The temperature was minus 23 degrees Fahrenheit. A mirage made the sastrugi appear to be dancing like some ice goblins. Joyce calls them dancing jimmies. After lunch we travelled well, but the distance for the day was only 7 miles, 400 yards. We are blaming our sledge meter for the slow rate of progress. It is extraordinary that on the days when we consider we are making good speed, we do no more than on days when we have a tussle. March 15th. The air temperature this morning was minus 35 degrees Fahrenheit. Last night was one of the worst I have ever experienced. To cap everything, I developed toothache, presumably as a result of frostbitten cheek. I was in positive agony. I groaned and moaned, got the medicine chest, but could find nothing there to stop the pain. Joyce, who had wakened up, suggested methylated spirit, so I damped some cotton wool, then placed it in the tooth, with the result that I burnt the inside of my mouth. All this time, my fingers, being exposed, it must have been at least 50 degrees below zero, were continually having to be brought back. After putting on the methylated spirit, I went back to the bag, which, of course, was frozen stiff. I wriggled and moaned till morning brought relief by enabling me to turn out. Joyce and Wilde both had a bad night, their feet giving them trouble. My feet do not affect me so much as theirs. The skin has peeled off the inside of my mouth, exposing a raw sore as a result of the methylated spirit. My tooth is better, though. We have had to reduce our daily ration. Frostbites are frequent in consequence. The surface became very rough in the afternoon, and the light, too, was bad, owing to cumulus clouds being massed over the sun. We are continually falling, for we are unable to distinguish the high and low parts of the sastrugi surface. We are travelling on our ski. We camped at 6 p.m. after travelling 6 miles, 100 yards. I am writing this sitting up in the bag. This is the first occasion I have been able to do this for some time, for usually the cold has penetrated through everything should one have the bag open. The temperature is a little higher tonight, but still it is minus 21 degrees Fahrenheit, 53 degrees of frost. Our matches, among other things, are running short, and we have given up using any except for lighting the Primus. The party found the light bad again the next day. After stumbling on ski among the sastrugi for 2 hours, the men discarded the ski and made better progress. But they still had many falls, owing to the impossibility of distinguishing slopes and irregularities in the grey, shadowless surface of the snow. They made over 9.5 miles that day and managed to cover 10 miles on the following day, March 18th, one of the best marches of the journey. I look forward to seeing the ship. All of us bear marks of our tramp. Wilde takes first place. His nose is a picture for Punch to be jealous of. His ears, too, are sore, and one big toe is a black sore. Joyce has a good nose and many minor sores. My jaw is swollen from the frostbite I got on the cheek, and I also have a bit of a nose. We have discarded the ski, which we hitherto used, and travel in the finneskoye. This makes the sledge go better, but it is not so comfortable travelling as on ski. We encountered a very high, rough sastrugi surface, most remarkably high, and had a cold breeze in our faces during the march. Our beards and moustaches are masses of ice. I will take care I am clean-shaven next time I come out. The frozen moustache makes the lobes of the nose freeze more easily than they would if there was no ice alongside them. I ask myself why on earth one comes to these parts of the earth. Here we are, frostbitten in the day, frozen at night. What a life!